seems a pity to miss such a good pudding.
Welcome to Euro Pudding. Euro Pudding is the European Screenwriters podcast about writing and producing better TV in Europe with weird accents. This is episode 12 of Euro Pudding. My name is Pierre Puget, and I'm a French writer based in Berlin.
I'm Philipp Scherzer. I'm a German writer, and I'm also based in Berlin. Again, in a different room, though.
Yes, COVID forces us to do this, but yes.
Yeah, definitely. This podcast is made by Sean, the Serialized Alumni Network. We represent the screenwriters and producers from all over Europe who went through the Serialized Writing Program in Berlin. And to know more about our writers and producers, members, Serialized, or the organization Sean, check our website www.seantv.net.
Yes, SeanTV.net. You can find all our lovely faces and bio. You can also, of course, find all the episodes. And you can write us an email and leave us a comment. So that would be nice to know, what you think and if you have suggestions of what we should talk about in a future episode. And also, don't forget, right now on your app, on iTunes, on Apple, whatever you're using, put like some stars, some comments. It helps us a lot to, and it helps other, people to find us. So that's been a shit show of a week.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Is it just me, or can you actually hear today in our voices that we have had a weird time lately?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think, of course, we put too much pressure on the new year, and of course, the year could not have been so basically today we just learned that in Berlin and in Germany the lockdown we're in will probably go on for weeks and weeks and weeks, probably until Easter.
Merkel said 8 to 10 weeks, right?
Yeah. So, we're in that for so long now. And it's not, it's not like in some other countries where we cannot leave our apartments. We're still free to go where, we want to go, if we want to go to a park or, but it starts to be long. And I have to say, I have trouble focusing on work. I have to write a new draft of a concept of a TV series, and I don't know, like yesterday I was happy because I had one idea.
At least one. It's better than
sure,
none.
Exactly. it's a bit slow.
But apart from trying to work, what have you been up to, like, since the January 1st?
I finished a second draft of a Bible, of a project that is way more advanced, so I know where I'm going on this one, so it was easier and quicker to do. This one is sent to be read now, so let's see what happens with that. And I also, I think I can say it, yes, I joined the team working on 1899, the new Netflix project from the creators of Dark.
Cool. And yes, nice.
So I'm a little clog in the machine. I'm the French consultant doing the French dialogues translation for them. But it's really fun to be a small part in a very, very big machine like that. And so, yeah. And so that's a very exciting, small but fun job.
Definitely. I mean, you're definitely going to tell us more about that during the year.
Yes, I will. I mean, I'm not assigned an end yet, so of course I cannot tell a lot, but it's I will try to tell more, like the shooting should start at some point during the year, crossing fingers with COVID, but it's exciting.
Yeah, nice.
What about you?
I don't know. I'm focusing on writing a Bible right now as well. And I don't know, apart from working, trying to work, I go outside, go for a walk, as like everybody does right now in a way. And I actually finally managed to finish the book, The Revolution Was Televised.
Oh, yeah. I also read some part of it again because to prepare some of my class where I teach, about TV series. Yeah, it's a really, really inspiring book. So yeah, good of you for bringing it up, because I think our listeners would enjoy that by Alan Sepinwall, right?
Yeah, it's Alan Sepinwall, and it's basically a book about like the key cornerstones of American television. He writes about The Sopranos, he writes about Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Lost, 24, The Shield, The Wire, And yeah, all these chapters, they're really, I don't know, they're just really, really interesting about how these series came into being and what the troubles were with these series and how long it took sometimes to make them. And I think it's a really, really, really good read, actually.
No, I really love this book. Actually, talking about writing a TV series, we have a call, like a contest to relay. So Detect, we talked about Detect before in our podcast. It's a big, I would say, university project analyzing crime series in Europe through like so many different lenses. They are launching with Serialize a contest for projects of crime series. So if you have a really cool crime series project that you think is a new original, could change the way we talk about crime and police in Europe, in your drawers or in your mind, you still have some time. I think you have more detail, right? Feel like it's the deadline is like in March, 1st of March?
Yeah, the deadline is actually, so if you want to apply for that, the actual deadline is the 1st of March. And you basically, we're going to put all the info on it, the links in our show notes. So you can actually check out like what the requirements are, what you have to write, what you have to end in. And and if you win, you can actually attend the Detect final conference in Rome, which is going to be hopefully going to be in Italy on 21st till the 23rd of June.
Yeah, I confirm to you that Rome will be in Italy, but let's hope that we can imagine traveling again. I watched a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon yesterday. You know the Angli.
I saw the post on your Instagram
movie, and it's a movie I love, and it reminded me like 2 years ago I was traveling in China for research, and it was, you know, it seems so far away, and like the idea of going to Rome for a meeting or a festival seems so. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. Let's go into our main topic of the day. And I just want to say hello because we notice we have now new listeners in Iceland. So I should have looked up how to say hello in Icelandic, but we have little preparation in here, you know. So. And we welcome Katarina Tomkova in the pudding.
Welcome.
Hello. Hello, guys. Hello, listeners. Pleased to be here.
So it's great to have you.
You are you had a quite busy week, I think. You're in the middle of the workshop, right? On Zoom. So we are adding to your time off screen. We're sorry.
That is correct. But it's as we were talking just a minute ago, it's such a great pleasure to be reconnecting with the people that I was used to seeing at the circuit and missing out on that. So I'm very happy and to be here, of course. And it's a great honor to be invited. Thank you.
So you are in Prague?
Yeah. Not exactly. No. I'm in Slovakia at the moment because I was visiting family, and it's a little bit more difficult now to travel even into the neighboring country. So I'm still kind of stuck in Slovakia, but soon enough I'll be reconnecting from Prague. The beauty of doing online workshops is probably that you can do them from anywhere you like if you do have that Wi-Fi connection. So that saves me, and that really gives me the option to at least move a little bit around.
Good. And maybe you can enjoy a bit of the forest, like the Tatras, or what is over there? I don't know.
yes, there are Tatras. I'm at the opposite side of Slovakia. I'm actually quite near the Hungarian border.
Oh, but I
so I enjoy the pusta, as they say in Hungary.
that sounds great, too. I have great memory of woods in Slovakia. So.
Oh, good.
All right.
That's a story for another podcast,
yes.
assume.
Yes, the Woods of Europe podcast. You are here because you are the program coordinator for Midpoint. Midpoint, we will go in detail about it, is an institute that is organizing training for international writers and producers, also for movies, for TV series, and also with like a consultant, TV festival and all that. So it's a quite a comprehensive package, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, there was originally Midpoint started off with feature films originally. That was back in 2010. Last year, actually, we celebrated our 10th birthday, and had this pandemic not happened, we would be celebrating all that all year around with all of our friends and graduates and tutors and partners. Sadly, this was only happening in Berlin at the beginning of the year while we still could, and the rest of the celebrations took place online. But yes, the Midpoint was established under the famous Prague Film School, FAMU, and basically AMU as the main kind of organization that is shielding us, the Academy of Performing Arts in Prague, and reacted as a, it was a program that was designed to support young filmmakers and young graduates that were coming out of school. Because the departments cooperated a little bit with each other, but what we found is that once the filmmakers were coming out of the school, there were the writers from their department and the directors from their department and the producers from theirs, and that there was that they needed to be trained how to work collectively on the creative development. So this was missing. And that's where we kind of felt that there is a need and demand on the market. And we started organizing first in collaboration with other European film schools, Eastern European film schools, the first workshops that were designed for feature films, already working with writers and producers. And as the market, I guess, was developing itself and, you know, the series became the new hot thing. We just, I told this a billion times already, I would love to take credit for myself being so genius to come up with a idea of creating a series workshop, but actually it was our graduates and the young talents that we were working with that really were hungry for this type of training and information and education. So basically the first years of TV Lounge, as our flagship program for series is called, it was in 2015 where we were doing only one-off separate labs, and they were only for writers that could be considered as a test year for how the training would work. And soon enough, it became a snowball of adding more and more and more layers of training, and it became bigger and more complex, and then started also focusing on producers because we felt we really need to bring them in as well. And yes, so slowly it developed to now us having three series programs, that are oriented for series. We have several ones that are working with feature films, and we also have a branch that is working with short films. It's always fiction that, if that's probably important to add, that we are working with fiction content, not documentary.
But yeah, it's great to hear how that's kind of how the how this expanded, like from the year it started to kind of how it got bigger and bigger. I mean, now basically you only need to add non-fictional storytelling and then you kind of have it all.
Yes, that's very true. And I think it was important, and this is something that we were always very keen on. After each workshop ends, we really sat down with not only the tutors, but also with the participants, and really discussed. And even, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 years later, once they leave the program and they have this project on their hands, and maybe they hit some struggles when entering the market, and they feel that there's some other support that they would need, it will always be, you know, us reconnecting with them, either, you know, via a phone call or meeting them at different festivals or events. And really, it's an ongoing discussion that we have with those graduates to kind of still bring whatever they feel is going to help them to position either their talent or them as professionals or their project. Because, of course, as I think it's probably also important to add, that our main focus, though we have programs that are not only focused on Central and Eastern European talents, that this is our primary territory, if you will. Of course, the situation, I'm not saying it's easier in Western Europe, but there are some budget and administrative and organizational challenges that comes from these smaller territories that are not as developed in the industry as some of the others.
Yeah, but that's what strikes me when I go on your website. So midpointinstitute.eu, that's right?
Yes, correct.
Is that like not only it's very like like all this offer you just described is there, but also it seems like such a great opportunity for a lot of people to fill in the gaps that, of course, there are amazing film schools in Eastern Europe, but like you have also this chance of, and because you're right, in Germany, in France, like the countries we know, there's a lot of grants and a lot of stuff, but it's a bit stuffy. It's a bit, you know, it's difficult to make things move. And it feels like with what you're doing is actually filling all the gaps and helping people like navigate the new markets and the new way of doing things, right?
Yes, exactly. That's our main objective, I would say.
So right. also to inspire this collaboration, I think, you know, the getting all the people together and.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, the collaboration is a very important part, whichever training we are offering. Basically, the main methodological tool, I would say, is group work, which means that the projects are not only in the room with their tutor, but they get to know each other's projects. And that is very important because not only it serves as a good training opportunity to learn to edit or maybe co-develop other people's projects, because you see them differently if it's not your own project that you're working on, and perhaps they get trained on different genres or working with different type of writers. But also it's I've seen it happen many times in our TV lounge or other programs as well, that it gives a beautiful cultural diversity, and it really opens up the room in a way that perhaps sometimes something that might feel completely understandable and comprehensible for you as a writer from a certain territory might not be as clear for the others. And I'm not saying that we are trying to make this universal, you know, very neutral projects. On the contrary, we are supporting them and emphasizing that they have to be kind of authentic and stay true to their local core. But for them to hop on that international level and to position them internationally, it's important that they do have that universal message that anybody from any territory could connect with. And I think that bringing together 20, 30 people that are across different European countries and mixing them up with tutors that come not only from Eastern Europe, but also Western Europe or US or Australia, is a beautiful thing, because then eventually you feel that the core of the creative business here is to tell stories and share thoughts and experiences. And it's such an inspiring, actually, thing to witness when it's happening on the workshop.
Yeah, I mean, this is also why we're doing this podcast and what excited us also in the Serialize experience that we had. I just want to make a parenthesis to just say that it's very funny, but just while you were talking, I had a little email notification appear about a new Midpoint workshop.
Oh. We're everywhere. So,
this is working really well, your advertising. See, what is that?
A intensive to my Slovakian from the PR department, for sure.
Yes. So the working language is English, because now I'm receiving an email for a Slovakian yes. director's workshop, yes. But like all your workshops are mostly in English, right?
Yes, correct. Of course, when you put into a room people of different nationalities, so basically English is possibly the only option that we can use. But you're right, for specific tailored workshops that we do particularly, usually happens with institutions that are specifically Czech or Slovak, we are doing the training in their local language. So, because of course there are certain writers that perhaps, you know, talking about their project and about creative issues, they might feel more comfortable in speaking in their own language. Though, whenever we bring a tutor that speaks their language, say Czech or Slovak, we make sure that this person does have that international experience and is not only working in the region, but, you know, can take the experience from all around the world.
So let's focus on the main TV workshop you have that is still open for people to apply.
Yes.
So yes, until the end of this month. So listeners, you have 2 weeks to check it out and apply if you are interested in this workshop, which is in three parts, right? Over the year.
Correct. So TV Lounge, let's very much hope that this year will be happening in three residential parts. But when I say three residential workshops, yes, it means that we invite the projects that consist of teams of writers, producers to come to a specific locations where we bring the tutors and we work together. That said, I have to emphasize a lot of the work actually happens in between the residential workshops, because we have a pretty strict but very efficient system of deadlines for deliveries, and that's the only way, not only way, but that's a very efficient way to make sure that at the end of the training actually the projects have something that we can push them out into the world and market, and kind of for them to have those selling documents. That's kind of the angle there, because the projects that usually come or apply, they're very early in development. That means that we really don't require, some might think, oh, but I don't have my pilot script ready to apply yet. This is not at all a necessary thing to have. We also accept projects that are a few pages of a pitch or an idea, and we bring them. That's why we call the lab, we call it for the idea to market lab, because we really bring them from that early idea and bring them to the graduation materials that consist of a several times revised pilot script. Sometimes if they're quick, they even have the second episode written. And of course, what they will need going out into the market, meaning a Bible or a pitch book. Sometimes they shoot even a teaser to attract the decision makers and, of course, broadcasters, finances of any sort. So that's the angle. Of course, every workshop has a specific focus, I would say. The first one, which we call the Hotel Shining workshop, it's because we go into the middle of nowhere and basically really lock up the teams to work without no distractions. And that is really focusing on the concepts, meaning if they don't have a bulletproof concept, we don't let them out of the room, because we feel the more prepared that is, the less they're going to struggle later on.
That's not ideal. Point of view of a writer, like, I want to be put in a room and fed and forced okay. and forced to talk with people until a concept is done. That sounds the only way to do it.
Yes, I mean, I have to confess that it was a little bit spooky, because, of course, in the instruction emails, we were saying like, oh, we're going into this hotel complex that is in the middle of the woods. But I don't think many of our participants nor tutors really imagined it as in the middle of the woods, saying there was nothing but the hotel, a lake and woods. And the closest city or little town was around 40 kilometers away. There was nothing close.
let me guess, no phone reception as well.
Very poor phone reception. Yes, correct. I mean, if you wanted to have a phone call, there were specific places that you needed to go out, you know, not exactly up on the hill, but, you know. But it really makes the teams able to really get into their project and really focus. And they basically, from the moment that they wake up and they go to the breakfast, they start talking immediately until they go to sleep or have that last ring at the bar before it closes and everybody goes to sleep. There's nothing else they talk about but the project. And it's very lovely also because the teams themselves often don't get that opportunity to meet that much, because perhaps, you know, the writers are from a different city than the producer, or if it's a co-production project or more international project that already came, they're even based in different states. So they really, really appreciate having this opportunity to work with no distractions. Because our program is really keen on including these writing slots every day, so it means that we're not only discussing and analyzing the project itself, but for example, half of the day it would be the talk with the tutors, and then in the afternoon they would go and write based on the assignments from that particular day. And this system actually means that at the end of the week they can leave with something actually written in their hands, and that's, I think, priceless, because it also teaches the participants a sort of a way how to function on a day-to-day basis and to develop and to have that workflow and how to achieve it and how to push yourself forward. So I think that's a very important lesson that they learn on the first workshop, and it really enables them kind of to continue with this work ethic, if you will, in the following weeks and months. So when they return back to workshop two, they should be around at least having the pilot script outlined, if not having written a few acts of it or even have the first draft of it. And this, of course, makes them able to focus on the season arc. And that's where the producer comes in, and they already start working on the budget, on the production planning, on the financing, and that really puts together, or they start putting together the Bible, of course, to have all the materials ready during the second workshop. And besides, of course, the dramaturgical tutors that are there during the first workshop all the time, we also bring in several professionals, both from Western and Eastern Europe, that teach the production side of it, things and financing and distribution. We also always bring in a director tutor, because most of our, I should have said that at the beginning, that kind of the core focus group that we work with are talents that come from a feature film background. So, of course, we need to explain what the position or the role of the director is in series, because, of course, this differs from feature films. So they discuss how to share visions and to make sure that everybody is on the same page and that the creative kind of vision is there from every side. And then, of course, by the third workshop, all of this should be ready, and we prepare them for a public pitching session, after which they have one-to-one meetings. Again, this is a workshop pitching, so don't imagine it as, you know, that big market pitching as they have, I don't know, in Series Mania Forum. It's much smaller, it's much more intimate, but it to think of it as a test drive with your project, where you can try out if, you know, a certain way of positioning your project works or not, or where the tweaks are, or what you can fine tune for the later positioning at these events. So basically that all is more or less the whole journey of our project.
Yeah. So this year I watched the online pitch
that
you did at the Tallinn Festival, Black Night Festival. So that was quite nice. So they had to record little videos because, of the pandemic.
Yes.
But that was quite interesting to see all these like different universe in just a few minutes. But you're right that it's pitching is at the same time very important, but then sometimes we put sometimes too much focus on it. And I think it's good to know what you have. Usually that's what I'm do myself, but also might tell my students is when you prepare your pitch, you actually learn about your project more because you have to summarize it. Is it something you also see often arriving?
Exactly. Yes.
It's also kind of when you kind of write the Bible, you actually learn stuff about the pilot, and then you go back to the pilot and go back to the Bible, and it's always like this back and forth thing.
So can you tell about the position of the producer in the project next to the writer/director? How do everyone need to come with a producer production company attached, and how are they collaborating in the workshop?
Yes, it is a prerequisite that we have, so that we really ask. I mean, you don't need to have a producer attached to apply. But if selected, we need the producer to come on board, because the producers go through their own kind of stream of training, as I said. And the producers are trained in, of course, story development and editing, because eventually when they go home, they will have to be not the lead writers, of course, but they will need to learn how to manage the team of writer or writers. basically mostly because nothing really as a typical showrunner in that sense of the world is existent in Central Eastern Europe. So basically we think of the duo or the pair of the writer producer as kind of a supplement of that system. And of course, during the training that is happening on the second and third workshop, we really push them to be able to prepare production plans, budget plans. They learn about the industry landscape. They learn about different financing models, how it differs when you set up a financing structure only, say, with a local broadcaster, or it's a co-production between broadcasters, or it's a co-production with an independent producer being on board, or even, say, a streaming platform, a local one, an international one, how that changes the revenues, the rights, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's a whole complex thing that we... Of course, it's a little bit overwhelming at first, but they need to learn it in order to enter the market and make the decisions that are best for their project. Not saying that, of course, a complicated co-production structure is the best for every project, not at all. Just the possibility of knowing what the options are there and what they entail is important to be teaching to the producers, I think. And of course, last but not least, then the final part of the training really focuses on how to pitch the project and how it differs when you're pitching to different people. Of course, you are pitching your project differently when you're talking to an international streamer than when you're talking to your local broadcaster. Or even having a closed meeting as opposed to a public pitching. And then a part of the training also addresses how to lead and the business meetings and how to process them out, what to say at first, what to say later, what are the issues that you would be need to tackling, what strategy to kind of take up in different stages of the project, etc. Did that answer your question, Pierre?
Yeah, I mean, I did, to be honest, I didn't expect that it was so comprehensive. That's extremely ambitious for these three. I mean, for this workshop, but that's great if you can put all that in the heads. I mean,
well, I do hope. But I mean, the main thing is that we are also trying to teach the producers to understand the creative process, and we are trying to bring the writers closer to the production processes and decisions that are made. So the collaboration between the two parts of the creative team would be the smoothest. So they would learn how to communicate these issues. For example, and this is also something that we added only this last year because it came up as a demand from our graduates, that we started teaching and involving our writers on a special seminar that we are doing outside the producer. So we split the groups of writers, producers, and only writers have a specific kind of a round table with discussing legal issues. Of course, it's difficult to be teaching legal things to people that are, you know, sensitive souls, and, you know, perhaps this is not their primary interest, but I think it's important that they know more or less at least what their rights are, what is possible to demand, what is, you know, demanding too much, and kind of bring them a little bit closer into the system that sadly is not that existing in Central Eastern Europe because of the great lack of any type of institution that would be organizing writers, because in many countries there's no union, no association of writers. And I think specifically in such a quickly developing market where, let's say, writers are king and are bringing content, it's important for them to understand where they are in this ecosystem, because if they want to or not, they are necessarily a part of it. And of course, we try to explain to them the system of managers and agents and how to find an agent or what to expect from an agent as opposed to a union. And of course, we also tried, we're collaborating a little bit with the Federation of Scriptwriters in Europe, which is tackling, of course, the issue of the European directive that is soon to be implemented in all of the countries of the European Union. So I think that's also an important thing to be a part of and to kind of voice yourself within your own country.
Of course, no, that's very important. And even, I mean, we see even in Germany or in France, as soon as you start talking about co-productions, about working in another country and collaboration, like, it starts to be a headache. And so I can imagine that in countries where all these laws are not as the protections are not as strong, and so we also with Sean trying to think of how to educate ourselves and our members a bit better about, you know, what are their rights and what is, you know, even morally, what is good and what is bad.
yes, to navigate yourself in, you know, it's a quite confusing world, I have to say, for myself as well. So I think as soon as you have at least some pointers, then you have like a vague idea of, you know, where, you know, south or north is, it just gives you a basic direction.
Right, so that sounds very ambitious and that people learn a lot. And I mean, I have to say it's very tempting, these three parts. And I can imagine that for a project that is, I was talking in the introduction that I have to rewrite a project that is still early phase. And I sit on my couch here for like hours just trying to figure like what is the show? being in such an environment as the one you describe and create, I think is exactly what we need as writers to go faster.
Can I just ask? So basically, what is like the time schedule of this whole thing? So as I understand it, right, it covers kind of the whole year, right? So you have like on the 31st of January, you have the people can still apply until then. And how does it go further?
That's a brilliant question, Philip. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, so the first workshop should be happening sometime in May. We do hope that us being a limited group of 30 people, perhaps, maybe, we wish this could be possible even in a residential physical way. And as I said, the first workshop, we are very much keen on this happening in the middle of nowhere. And as the timeline progresses and as we add more and more into the methodology and as the project open up, we bring them to a more lively and lively place. So in the summer, within the second workshop will be taking place. This is also, sadly for this year, a little bit of a question. And this also has a lot to do with the pandemic situation and with us navigating if it's going to be physical or not. We do hope that it will. And in case for us at the moment, it would be the easiest to also organize it in Czech Republic, as is the first workshop. So this is the summer. And then as Pierre was mentioning, our last year's pitching, we will follow the same structure for 2021, where the final workshop and the final presentation of the project will take place end of November in Tallinn, Estonia. And I do hope this would be happening full on physically and where we will be reconnected again. Which gives us roughly a 7-8 month process of development. And it's, I have to say, I really admire our participants because it's not an easy thing. It's super intense and they really, really, it's amazing how hard they work. They really, really put a lot of energy on the line and it always, you know, we do this year by year, and I'm always amazed how much energy and passion they can bring to their projects. And when I say we teach them, it sounds like we are that, you know, strict teacher in school. Not at all. I mean, it's amazing how much hunger for information and how much passion for what they want to do is brought into the room by them.
So one last question about this workshop and this call for project. What kind of selection process, like, do you have a preference for type of projects, for genre, or for where it is in the process of development? So, you know, to have an idea. And also maybe a list. I know it's annoying to make lists, but like of countries that are eligible.
Yes. Well, when it comes to the genre or phase in the development, we are not picky at all. The only kind of instruction that I can give is something that is authentic. And of course, when it's original, when it's something that we haven't read or seen on the screen before, of course, it makes all the difference. But sometimes, you know, it's a project that is quite simple and smaller in the production scale, but it's just so touching or so truthful in a way, or so important at the very time and age that it is pitched, that we are completely mesmerized by it and we select it. So it doesn't really, it's very hard to say. And I'm afraid that I will sound like a broadcaster, like any good project. And of course, we have a great look into behind who the project is being pitched by. So we are very interested in talents behind, and we really like to focus on new voices or you know, talented voices, authentic voices of writers behind, and people with that energy and passion to write. So that's, I would say, the main objective. When it comes to countries, yes, Pierre, there is a list that is available on our website, and basically it is Central and Eastern Europe, also in combination with what one of our funders, which is Creative Europe Media, defines as the low production capacity countries, because of course our objective is also to bring training to countries where the options are not that optimal, or they're smaller markets with limited access to international financing.
Excellent. Well, we have quite a big part of our listeners that are in Central and Eastern Europe. So hopefully this falls into the right ears. And so you have 2 more weeks to check it out and apply. And I want to open the discussion to actually the world of TV series in these countries, because I have to admit that I don't know a lot about what's
me
happening
neither,
there.
I have to say.
So how would you describe, like, very broadly, because of course each country I'm sure is different, but the situation for TV writers and the TV landscape.
Well, I think that we are witnessing that, you know, that change in the markets, because I think in the last, I would say 5 years, little by little and step by step, these countries are slowly making series that are starting to really have that voice and international impact, and they're either being bought to different other territories and or being actually even presented at festivals that, you know, give them that promotion. There have been several of, I know about several Czech shows that been to Toronto in their series section. There was a Croatian show actually written by our graduate, Maria Nalčevski, that was presented within the Series Mania program. So there, it takes longer, I have to say, probably than in other parts of the world, because of the development process is longer. Not having the tradition of developing high quality drama yet, and also the financing, which is you know, the old model was that you had your one local broadcaster that would finance the whole thing, and now that the options are open and there are new ways maybe of tackling it, or even if it's a project which is perfectly fine that is financed from one broadcaster only, but you find distribution partners that come on board and help you with that international push. So the situation is changing slowly but surely, and I'm very happy to see those results, because I kind of don't believe in competition in this sense, because I think that any type of success of your colleagues from, you know, similar area is something that actually elevates you, yourself and your project as well. So I'm really a person that speaks for kind of group support and collaboration in that sense.
completely agree. Do you have a example, maybe like a few titles of a series we should check out?
Yes. So when I was mentioning the Czech series, that was actually an HBO show that was called Wasteland, or they did Sleepers, that was produced, I think, last year or 2 years ago. There are a couple of Romanian shows that were produced recently. For example, that was Hackerville, that was also done in co-production with TNT, that was a German TV station, or Tough Money, which is a new thing, I think, just recently out. Of course, there are even co-productions happening within the regions. I know about a Polish, Czech, Ukrainian co-production, which was The Pleasure Principle. I think this was also a show that was screened at Series Mania. Yeah,
actually, it can be found now. It's on Arte this month, on Arte TV in Germany and in France.
So you can watch it.
See, that's synergy.
Yes, yes. And there are, of course, also some, there was a Bulgarian show, actually, that was produced by one of our graduates, Martička Bavrilova, that was called, I think, The Son, or The Father. Sorry, I may be mixing up the title, but it was a Bulgarian show that was also circulating the festival. So certainly they are there. I think that the digital distribution and the option to be able to access shows from all around the world really helped to get non-English speaking shows up in the spotlight, and really helped to get them out into the world. And it actually happened to me at one of these bigger events where an American producer was saying that suddenly he was passing his children's bedrooms and he heard like a strange language, and suddenly the American kids were watching a Israeli show or a German show or, you know, shows from all around the world. And actually they were opting not to watch them with dubbing, but to watch them with subtitles. So I am optimistic when it comes to non-English content, because I think that the audience eventually are people that are focusing on great content in the first place, whichever language it may come in. So maybe I'm naive, I don't know, but this is what I strongly believe in.
Now, to me, it feels like it's something that we gradually kind of are getting used to at the end of the day.
What do you think writers in Central and Eastern Europe are still need, or still what would be the advice you would give them, or what is the next step for them?
Well, I think that they come with brilliant stories and they really bring that talent with them. So I think what could really elevate them onto the next level is to basically get into the international environment and network. So I do think that the platforms where, whether it's a festival or it's a market or it's a different other type of meeting, it doesn't have to be, you know, a businessy oriented event, but whenever you can meet people from all around the world or from Europe, it really helps to understand not only how things can be made in a different country, but really kind of get the writers or the creative teams onto really to be spotlighted internationally. So I think this is something that is certainly worth investing time and energy into.
I agree. This is also advice I give a lot, is go to the festivals, meet people, travel. And also I'm so happy to have so many friends from all over the world and Europe, and to meet them again and again. And when we do our pitch circus, it's so nice to hear all these crazy ideas. And even Kesnievich, who was a writer on Ackerville, is always a big star of our show, is a very dry Serbian humor. So it's always, I love that. And I think it's super, important, because I think I was in the writer's room recently, and it was people from all over Europe in the room. And that's, you know, it the kind of ideas that come when we can meet and unleash our ideas and check, as you were saying earlier, like what is translating or what is not, and what kind of shared experience or not, what kind of surprising difference of point of view we have on something.
Yes, exactly. And also comparing experiences, because I think that's the biggest asset that our, for example, tutors bring to the table, because it's not just a academic training that they are offering. Of course, there's the sort of kind of structure of the education for sure. But having, for example, our tutor Gábor Krüger talking about his experience of doing his Hungarian show Golden Life, or even Nebojša Taraba, who is our producer tutor from Croatia, and him speaking about how he worked for different broadcasters, a cable HBO or the HRT, which is the Croatian national public broadcaster, and then kind of him speak about how these projects were positioned and how they traveled. I think it's a great inspiration for the projects or any creators coming and listening to, you know, a success story of somebody who already did it, and watching it happen, and to see that it is possible to travel internationally with a Croatian show.
Yeah. I mean, writers are all, you know, neurotic and a lot of fear, and so hearing the that people went the same way, struggled the same way, but succeeded. Yeah, you're right. It's very important.
Just in a way, a bit about a question about you and your career in general, because one of our next episodes is gonna be also, we're gonna focus on non-fictional storytelling. And you kind of, as a producer, you also have like quite some experiences in making documentaries.
Yes. And,
well, wait. Let me maybe do a little biography. We were supposed to start with it,
but then
we went right away into midpoint. So now let's talk about you, Katarina, because you are from Slovakia. You are a graduate of philosophy from the University of Bratislava. You worked at the Film Reviewer, and then you moved to the other side of the camera to work in production.
Yes, I did it all. I have a feeling that I really switched to all sides of the process from every angle during my younger years, yes.
And then you worked for the promotion of Slovakian cinema in the world and in festivals and things. And now you, in parallel to your work at Midpoint, you are also a producer with your own production company called Kaleidoscope.
Right.
So
what
is cooking for Katarina, the producer, and Kaleidoscope?
Oh, well, you caught me off guard a little bit with this question, I have to say. But, just to quickly react to your wonderful listing of all of my activities, I really, and if there's anybody listening that is wondering how to get into the business, or they are not quite inside the industry in their own country or international, I would say it was super important, at least for my career, to get my hands dirty with all sorts of work around film. So I really, from an assistant and working on commercials and being a film reviewer and a PR agent for a festival, I think I really exchanged all sorts of jobs before I started doing what I do. And it really, really was important, and it really, really formed me. So I couldn't be more thankful for all those experiences. And yes, as a producer, I work on art house films that I produce from my Slovak company. Last year, I was, in hindsight, I consider myself very lucky that I premiered one of my films at the Berlinale at the Encounter section called Servants, which had a very interesting year. Ended up at festivals and did quite well. But of course, a lot of those were online, and it was very interesting to see a very different type of distribution process and festival career for a film. At the moment, I am working on a film that is still positioned by its working title called Censor, by a Slovak documentary filmmaker Peter Kerekes, which is a Slovak, Czech, and Ukrainian co-production, soon to come out, hopefully. And I'm also working on a new upcoming film of another Slovak director, Juraj Lehocký, called Applause, which I am soon going to present at a event that is called Les Arc, Festival's Work in Progress. So that's happening this month as well. So that's my producing career.
Oh, well, that sounds exciting. Except, well, Les Arcs online and not there is a pity.
Yeah, I know. No skiing and
cheese. Yeah.
Yeah, the question that I basically had is because we in one of our upcoming episodes we're going to focus on non-fictional storytelling. So just in general, like, do as a producer, is there like a lot of difference for you between like producing fiction and non-fiction, or is that kind of, could you say in a way it's similar?
That's a good question. I work with filmmakers that do creative art documentaries. So in a way, in the content, it is very similar in how I position the projects is very similar. Basically, they would be running up against the same festivals, the same sales agents, the same distributors. So the way how I communicate them and market them is very similar. Yet working with documentary films is a little bit more unpredictable. They sometimes took a lot longer than was anticipated to make, and sometimes the format turns out differently. But I think that as any producer working with documentaries, I see beauty in this, because of course it's always a wonder to me how, you know, unexpectedly a project can turn out and how much surprises and basically even very strong emotions are coming from that authenticity that these filmmakers can bring on the screens.
Would you one day imagine working on a TV series, or is that the day job?
That's the day job, actually, yeah. I don't really have that ambition, and in a way it keeps me healthy and mentally stable that I can really draw a line between the two, and the work as a programmer for Midpoint and the work as a producer. And I really think that it's important for me to kind of keep myself free from any certain kind of conflict of interest, and I really like to know what hat I'm wearing. It's important, I think, not only to people that I talk to at that very moment, that they know who they are talking to at that very moment, but it's also important for me to keep my head clear. So no aspiration of that sort for now.
That sounds very healthy. And actually, my recommendation will be about also movies and auteur movies, because I've been... I found myself in the last few months watching a lot of quite strange author movies, and I realized that in a way, after working a lot in TVs and watching a lot of TV, there's something that is sometimes too big and too commercial, and because we have to follow a lot of rules and codes, and suddenly watching a 2-hour strange vision that is ending actually was very resourcing. Can I say that? I don't know. Is it an English word? Who knows?
You can say anything.
Yes. If people understand what it means, then it
is. It's a podcast with weird accents. It could also be a podcast with weird words as well. So.
But great. Well, thanks a lot. I think we had a great overview of what you do, what Midpoint does, and I think it's a lot, and it sounds very important and exciting for and a great opportunity for writers and producers who have projects in Eastern and Central Europe. And so I invite everyone to check out. We will put the link of the website in our show notes. And thank you, Katarina, a lot.
Yeah, thank you
very much.
Definitely.
Thank you very much, Pierre. Sorry.
Let's just quickly remind our listeners again, the deadline for applying for TV launch is
January 31st.
Thank you.
This year. Thank you very much. And I would just also quickly add that this year, particularly, we are not opening the call for a special stream of training within TV Lounge, because we are taking I think quite rightly so, the selected participants from last year's selection that couldn't enroll into the training because of us switching to online format. But this year we will be also introducing a new batch of what we call the development executive participants, which are participants that we are training to become what basically in Eastern, Central Eastern Europe is known under the term of dramaturgs, television dramaturgs, or let's say commissioning editors, but not only working for a broadcaster, say if it's a bigger production house, then it can be a development producer. Basically people that we teach how to lead the development process, creative process of creating a series that we feel that is very essential to kind of support also the other side of the table when developing series and kind of to build the bridge from both sides. So I'm very happy that all of the selected participants from last year accepted the offer to enroll this year, and they waited for us for a year. And I'm very happy to welcome them. And because I speak a lot, I'm sorry, though these deadlines are closed, but of course they will be open soon this year, but later in the year. We also offer training without a project that is oriented for writers, and this is open to any European nationality. So that could be interesting for any European writer, where we simulate the work in a writer's room. And then another training that we will be running now in a week and a half that is dedicated to feature film producers that are looking into transforming into series content. So basically it's a very quick one-off training session for the producers to kind of introduce them to the differences between creative development, between features and series, and of course the financing of features and series. So this will be happening online now in January, but of course we will be doing another call this year for the next year's edition. So if anybody has any questions connected to, and the producer training is also open for Europe. So if anybody has other questions regarding not only TV Lounge, but our other programs, I'm very happy to answer all of them.
Excellent. That sounds very complete. And I mean, it sounds so smart that you train all these different parts, because it makes a full system work better. Because we are nothing if we don't face smart commissioners. So on. So, well, thank you for the interview, and thank you for all
thank
the work you,
so
you do.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for taking the time.
Yeah, it was a great, great pleasure. I had a great time, and see you soon. I hope this will be happening.
Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Crossing fingers. Pressing thumbs soon. When they do the same German.
Thank you very much, and have a lovely evening. Bye-bye. And thank you to the listeners as well. Bye.
So that's good.
And this is where we say thank you to our sponsors.
Thank you,
C21 in London, c21media.net. It's the home of the international entertainment community. They're an international publishing company and a digital channel business. They organize many events like Content London. They have a mailing list. You can receive everyday news about the industry in Europe and in the world. They have been supporting Sean and the podcast from the beginning. So thank you, C21. And thank you also to Paper2Film.com. It's a website. It's a French script platform where producers, agents, commissioners can look at your project. It can be just a synopsis. It could be a pilot. It could be a Bible, a concept. You choose what you share. It's also, there's an editorial, so it's curated. So only the best projects are put on the platform. It's free for writers to put their first few projects. So there's nothing to lose and a lot to gain. It's French, but it's opening now. The website is in English for now a year, and is more and more visited by international partners. So yeah, thank you, Paper2 Film, and go check it out. All right, that was a great episode. I think we learned a little about Eastern and Central Europe for the TV landscape, but we learned a lot about Midpoint, and I think they do a lot of great workshops. So I invite everyone to check it out and see for themselves.
It's really great how as you said already, kind of that they bring this whole process together, kind of make it full circle, like bringing the writers, directors, producers, and commissioning, like. I don't know, teaching like in a way about the whole TV business at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you know, for example, the last this thing about like teaching a cinema producer to move into TV, because I mean, how many of us have been disappointed yes. by some great producers who are lovely people, but have no idea what they're doing when they move to TV, because it's a very, very, very different business and in terms of scale. And little by little, teaching all these little parts and making sure that everyone speak the same language and have the same ambition. I think that's how we make better TV.
Definitely.
Talking about better TV, you have a recommendation?
Definitely. I mean, there's a series that got me kind of in a way through some lockdown Christmas gloom a little bit. I have to admit, like during Christmas and New Year's, because you couldn't really celebrate New Year's and all that, and the gray weather outside here in Berlin felt a bit gloomy sometimes. And I have to admit, the series Friday Night Lights, American series, which was made between 2006 and 2011. I don't know, that kind of really got me in a positive mood, not all the times, but sometimes. And I don't know, this kind of the sense of family, the sense of community. Just for you to let know, Friday Night Lights is a show about high school football and in Texas and the communities and the families around that. And it's not like a typical American feel-good series or anything, but
I never watched it, but I know that
it's really good.
It's really well loved, and apparently, yeah, it's a really good spirit and very, very well done. So.
And kind of sometimes you just need the kick in the ass from a football coach in a
yes.
way.
I'm not really into football, but like, who knows? Yes, probably. My recommendation is a bit different. And like I was saying to Katarina, that I've been watching more and more auteur movies lately, because I needed like this kind of more crazy visions, you know, like getting a bit thinking outside the box. So I started again Mubi subscription. You know Mubi? MUBI. So Mubi is a kind of, it's a Netflix for author movies.
All right, that's cool.
I think they're based in the UK, but actually I'm not sure. And so basically the system, I mean, they started with a system where instead of having like an infinity, you know, too many movies, you don't know what to choose. It's super curated. And so you have only one new movie each day. So basically there's only 30 movies that you can watch, choose from.
It's actually quite a good thing.
Which is a very smart thing. And there's, you know, with selection and with theme and with, you know, like, so far, they started recently a selection of first features from famous directors. You want to see the first features of this and this and this. And so, you know, every 3 days, every 4 days, there's a new movie that is in this program. But also now on their website, they have apps for, you know, like your smart TV, your PlayStation and whatnot. But now there's a bit more than the 30 movies there. You can still watch more of their own distribution, because actually they started to buy a movie to distribute it themselves. They have actually a very interesting selection of author movies from all over the world. And recently they have, and it's still, you can still find them this month, Jodorowsky collection. So Alessandro Jodorowsky, Chilean, Argentinian, Mexican, crazy cult director who I knew from French sci-fi comic books when I was a kid, but actually I never watched his movies, and I watched already three of them that you can watch on Mubi. So Santa Sangre, El Topo, and The Holy Mountain. And these are batshit crazy stuff. it's just insane, but it's like, it's still very entertaining. It's full of symbolism. And of course, it's very, you know, 60s, 70s kind of artistic provocation, a lot of nudity, dead animals, and some violence and symbolism. But it's, I don't know, it kind of... Yeah, I watched it like fascinated, you know, like every five minutes something insane happens, but it's still clear, you know, it's not trying to be obscure. Of course, it's a bit poser and a bit intellectual, but like in a very fun way, there's still humor and kind of a too much attitude, you know, so it's crazy. Like it's really difficult to describe. It's kind of El Topo has been described as an acid Western. Really like a Western you have to watch when you have an acid, or at least that was written white on acid. And it starts with this cowboy all in black leather on a desert on a black horse, holding a black umbrella, and with him his naked little son on the horse with a gun. And that's, you know, that's just the beginning.
It's a great picture.
It's full of beautiful pictures. I mean, okay, I'm being too long now on Jodorowsky, but like, it's been, I don't know, it kind of, it was really nice to watch some kind of very specific, crazy author vision to be inspired, basically.
And the platform is Mubi again.
The platform is Mubi. It's like €10 a month. You can access this from a lot of your phone and your any kind of where you can watch stuff. And I mean, it's really worth it. And it kind of forces you to watch some stuff you would, you know, like not the most comfortable, not the most easy watch. But it's I don't know. I almost never regret pressing play on one of these movies. So
I think it's also quite good that they have like, I don't know, it's you said they're getting bigger, but they have like still a limited number. I think that's also quite good, actually, because I don't know if you noticed that, because on German Netflix they recently added the play something button. I don't know, it hasn't been there for long, but it's like, if you can't decide what to watch, Netflix will decide for you. To me, that's kind of, in a way, neglects the whole point of Netflix at the end of the day. But yeah,
I didn't see that. So I will try the Netflix thing. But like, for example, like I'm opening the Mubi app. They have, for example, Bacurau, Kleber Mendoza, crazy Brazilian movie from last year, which is very crazy. They have like some Chinese movie from Jiazhenke. I don't know, it's just like really good author movies and surprising and a bit crazy and yeah, it inspired me, so that's why I talk about it. All right, let's play a jingle. So that is it for our episode of Euro Pudding. Thank you for listening. We will be back very soon with more exciting guests. And you will find the show notes and the links of everything we talked about on our website, europudding.com, and here in your favorite podcast app.
Yes, and as we already said, please tell your friends about us, subscribe to us, like us on whichever platform you're listening to us. Find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just type Europudding. Leave us comments. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, Europudding. Find us anywhere, and good luck with this weird beginning of a year.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.